drinks a bunch. Be well, gang.
Be medium well, Danny. Fire it up!
Hey, Doc. What's with this Section 8 treatment?
It's more of a VO5 hot oil treatment.
Have a nice trip.
Okay, so the Time Travelers.
Mm-hmm.
Season 11.
Yeah. We're getting a little nice little tour of Mystery Science Theater. So wait, we haven't had a... I'm trying to think. We did a Mike one, right? And we did a one with the woman.
It's interesting that the vagaries of randomness have given us this odd collection. Because none of these are movies that we would have picked. Like, you know, they're not our favorites or anything.
Right. I mean, I don't remember this one well, but I like it a lot. So now it's kind of, maybe it's not one of my favorites, but it's definitely like a rewatch for me.
It's interesting because, like I commented last time, that was one of the rare ones I haven't seen. And this is also one of the rare ones I haven't seen.
You didn't watch this one, huh? This is season 11, though.
If I did, I don't remember any of this.
Yeah.
Maybe I watched it one day when I was like falling asleep or something, but I don't think so. None of this rings a bell at all.
Yeah.
It has such a generic 70s movie space plot. It's interesting, too, that we've now gotten several space movies in a row. Just two.
Yeah, I mean, this wasn't really about space. It was about the future, and it was about mutants, and they were building a rocket. They didn't actually go anywhere. They just went forward and backward in time, and then they went super forward in time, I guess, at the end. But we'll talk about the end later, because I'm like my mind is spinning a little bit with that. But yeah, it was really a time travel movie about the future and the apocalypse, like a nuclear apocalypse, I think.
They never really made that clear, did they?
Well, there was that one little, remember that one moment, and they had a great joke about it where the future scientist is like, let me explain what happened. And then he like punches a button and like magically you see the explosion that I guess caused the future.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a nuclear cloud.
Yeah, and they're like, everyone has a video queued up to play at any moment. Right, in case
right.
Time travelers.
Yeah, yeah. He pressed one button. It was the explain the future to time travelers button.
Yeah,
that was great. The jokes were really on point. I mean, if we were awarding the final scores exclusively based on the writing of the jokes, this would get a perfect 10 for me. I really like the jokes in this one. I don't think I'm going to end up giving it a 10 or anywhere close to that because of the movie and some other incidental things, but I loved the writing of the humor.
The interesting thing about this movie to me is, of all the movies we watched, it feels like the most 70s one. And I guess what I mean by that is, it's not a terrible movie.
No.
But it's got some really weird anachronistic stuff in it.
That, yeah.
And I don't mean anachronistic like they messed up and showed things that aren't supposed to be in this time period or whatever. But I just mean like it's so obvious that it was made in the 70s or maybe late 60s.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Like in theory, the plot of this movie is super serious. You know, it's a matter of life and death.
Yeah.
But there were at least a half dozen times where there were just these wacky interludes.
Yeah. They couldn't help themselves adding the, like when they added the scene with the woman playing the future keyboard,
right,
with the screen,
right,
and also people are making out in the back,
yeah,
and
then like the half naked women all laying around,
and then
in the spa scene.
yeah which I love the joke where they were like, this gets a Bechdel's test score of 0, because basically the entire time it's a group of scantily clad women in a future spa, and they're talking about how to get men.
Right.
The whole time.
Right.
Like, that's the only topic.
Right. But also this scene where, like, the android hand grabs his butt.
Oh, yeah. Classic. Oh, man. They spent an inordinate amount of time on the androids. I was kind of feeling like the, what would you call it? The production people, like the people that put together the props and scenes and stuff, must have had a larger than average say over this movie, because the movie was very impressed with itself at certain points, especially with all the android business. Like they loved showing the androids coming apart, being put together. They loved lighting them on fire. They loved when the mutants were stabbing them and it was like, look, real android parts are coming out of them. Like you could tell that they were spending a lot of money and time on that.
There's always a story, I guess, to every movie. I was reading about the last movie we saw, that H.G. Wells thing, and it turns out that it was this Canadian movie, and it was funded by the Canadian government. And anyway, there were some aspects to the production that make the movie make a little more sense, like why it existed.
Yeah.
We assume that everybody is out during every movie to make the best movie they can, but of course that's not true. There's lots of other things happening.
And yeah,
it makes me wonder, like in this one, we remarked a couple times about how they kept going back to old school stage magic tricks.
Yeah.
Like the old school kind where they take the head off the android.
Yeah.
Or the thing where they rotated him on a platform.
Yeah, and he disappears and then the platform falls.
Right.
And it's like, ooh, it was all in one scene. How did we do it?
And I bet you would find out that one of the guys in this movie, maybe even that Danny guy, like is a stage magician.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
I mean, there's no other reason to use that much classic stage magic in a movie.
That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, I guess that relates to my comment that it felt like the production was driving the script. It's like they, a large part of why this movie was made is like, hey, we've got lots of great ideas for visual trickery without much of a budget, and we need to frame a science fiction film around our ideas for trickery.
Yeah, right. Maybe. Yeah. But I mean, there's some reason why it was so specifically like stage magic, because I've seen other 70s movies and I don't remember there being a lot of you know, like Harry Houdini style magic.
Somebody on set was like a magician. Or multiple people, maybe. That makes a lot of sense.
I did like this one. It's certainly not going to be one of my favorites of all time. I think
it's not Criterion Collection for you.
Well, the thing I was actually remarking on in my mind, and this may sound a little more harsh than I intended, but it really feels like this was like, you know how when scientists need something like they want to measure a kilogram and they need the standard unit kilogram. This was like the standard unit Mystery Science Theater movie to me.
Oh, yeah.
Like exactly average.
Yeah.
I mean, is a compliment because I love Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah.
But it just felt like the riffs were really good. The skits were really good.
Yeah.
The movie is absolutely classic.
Yeah.
Like it kind of was a This Island Earth sort of, maybe not quite as good.
Yeah, I would say so. Well, what the ending of it with the rocket exploding and all that stuff and the mutants like taking down the cave fortress felt very similar to the end of This Island Earth.
Right.
Because like the same thing happens on Metachon or whatever the name of the planet is. Like the mutants come in and everything blows up and there's a big riot and it's like the same kind of thing.
I wonder how many of this movie there are.
I think like a lot.
Like hundreds, you figure?
I don't know. I think that this movie's probably breathing slightly rarefied air, because I think like This Island Earth, it's just a little bit elevated in budget. Like I do think there are a lot of movies that were made like lower or higher budget, and this is in a weird like low to medium kind of space. So I think that makes it a little unique. I suspect that this was picked very intentionally. This is the third episode of the reboot of Mystery Science Theater, right? Like
right.
It's season 11, episode 3.
Right.
So they're very early into their reboot. And I suspect that they picked it because it was exactly what you said. It was like a very standard, you know, guaranteed success Mystery Science Theater movie. It was a safe bet for them to make a good episode. And that's what they needed to sort of front load their season with, is like safe bets. Like, let's get some 70s sci-fi. We need some explosions. We need mutants. We need time travel. We need medium, low budget. We need bad acting, but not terrible. Color, not black and white.
Why is this one so much better than that H.G. Wells one? I mean, because I noticed in my mind, I was thinking about the scene where they walk through the screen at the beginning and the screen disappears, right? It explodes or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was the same as that scene I commented on last time, where the consequences were extremely dire. I mean, they're trapped in the whatever, the future forever.
Yeah.
But they're so wooden.
Yeah.
And yet somehow this is not a good movie, but it is way better than that H.G. Wells movie.
Yeah. Well, it made more sense, for one thing. It didn't have nearly as much... Like, there weren't a lot of random long sequences that didn't go anywhere. I think the one exception, and you pointed out live in real time, is when they go... It's the thing you were talking about where Danny's on the rotating table and he disappears and then pops up like a few feet away and they're like, see, we have a transporter. And then they're like, but we can't use it. And then they just walk out of the room.
Right.
And you're like, oh, that was pointless. Like, that didn't contribute anything to the plot. But most of the scenes in this movie, like, made sense and were driving something forward a little bit, even if it was dumb kind of character exposition. Whereas I think the H.G. Wells quote-unquote movie, not that it had anything to do with H.G. Wells, had a lot of nonsense that just didn't matter. Like, whole just long 20-minute sequences where you're just... It was just bafflingly unrelated to the main plot. And you're like, there's no reason to do this except padding. We thought that maybe they were doing it because they were following the book. And then we learned after we recorded that episode, we went back and checked the Wikipedia about the H.G. Wells book. And we're like, no, this has nothing to do with the book.
Nothing to do with
it. So then they must have just been ultra padding that film, just getting it to an hour and a half, right?
But this movie isn't good, to be clear.
No, it's not good.
And there is a lot of meandering about.
It's like coherent bad rather than incoherent bad.
Yeah.
It's controlled.
Yeah. I guess so.
And the acting was better than the H.G. Wells one.
The acting is better.
Like, it's one step up. It's not good. But it's, like, better.
Yeah, like, the main scientist guy from the future was actually a halfway decent actor.
He was fine.
Yeah. And
I mean, Danny is a lovable oaf. And there's a bunch of very vanilla, but sort of, you know, competently acted parts.
And we got to have that standard 70s subplot about how in the future we realize that it's okay for women to just hit on men.
Yeah, right. Yeah, brilliant female scientists getting around in a spa and talking about how they're going to pair up with the men
right.
when they board the rocket.
Right, but in a real female empowerment kind of way. Yeah, you know? Right. Like, it's okay for us to be sexy. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so 70s. I can't think of another movie off the top of my head that's such a textbook example of its time period.
Yeah, it goes further into being in its time period than something like This Silent Earth. Like, it does...
Right.
I think This Silent Earth tended to stay further away from the scantily clad women and the, you know, the Bechdel test zero and just sort of the things, you know, those kind of 70s tangents. It didn't have, you know, haircuts that were like enormous buns, you know, like that one woman that Danny keeps hitting on is like got 3 feet of hair.
Right.
And it's just like, that is incredibly dated. I'm not sure why, but yeah, This Silent Earth had a lot more restraint around that stuff.
Or maybe they edited it out. I mean, you have to remember they do edit these movies.
Could be. I've never watched all of this. I've never watched uncut This Silent Earth before, like the non-Mystery Science Theater version. I'm
right.
curious
yeah.
what else is in it.
So what did you think of the riffing and the skits? I feel like the skits in particular were substantially better.
Yeah, the skits were great. The highlights for me were obviously Jonah building his robots just so that his real robots could destroy them. And then
you just liked it because one of them was named Slappy.
Yeah,
that's
Slappy.
That's why you liked it.
Yeah, well, Slappy's Xbox compatible. I like that skit, and I really like this skit with the two guys, and Joel's one of them, and he's sort of silent the whole time, and they just come to visit.
Yeah.
And they're like, do you party?
The 70s party scientists.
And they're growing the oranges with vodka in it and stuff. Yeah. I mean, that was just, all of that was like, that was a straight 3 minutes of perfect comedy, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
I just thought everybody in that scene was just really on it. I really liked Joel just kind of, you know, like nodding his head and like being like a stoner. And, you know, it's just perfect for him. Great cameo.
Yeah. I remember when I first saw season 11, because obviously everyone was super hyped. I remember thinking that I liked it. And I guess I wasn't watching this specific movie. I probably was watching the very first one, which I don't even remember what it was. But I remember thinking that the jokes were too forced. Like they were coming too fast. They were literally too many. But I didn't feel that way watching this one. I didn't feel like that at all, really.
At the very beginning, I thought they were cramming in a lot. But after, or maybe I just got used to it, because after like 20 minutes or so, I wasn't bothered by it anymore. But yeah, sometimes I did feel like I wrote down on my phone, like they're talking really fast to try to get in more jokes.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're talking so fast, you can barely understand them. It almost seems like they're nervous or something. Like the effect is like that they're new to it, which is ironic because it's sort of like this long running show and the actors are new to it, but there's Joel is like backing it and presumably helping to direct it. And so you would think they'd be really experienced with the pacing. But yeah, sometimes the pacing was pretty fast. Most of the time though, I felt like it was pretty good. I was really impressed overall with the riffing.
I really like Jonah. I mean, I already knew I really liked Jonah, but this is just more evidence for me really liking Jonah. I think he's, I actually think he's a great lead.
Yeah.
I think he really understands the, of all the people in the new series, he most seems to understand that thing we were talking about last time where like they really are just making a dumb puppet show.
Yeah.
He seems to really grasp that.
Yeah. I think him, and I also really, I have to give props to Patton Oswalt. I mean, not that he's part of the riffing team, but he's just sailing through his version of TV's Frank. Like, it's such a great sequel to that character.
Yeah, well,
it's perfect.
I just think instinctively is like that.
Yeah, I think so. He's playing himself a little bit.
Pretty much.
But you think about how, like, TV's Frank was an extremely strong highlight of the early seasons of Mystery Science Theater. Like, it wouldn't be the same show without him. And back then, I would have been baffled at trying to come up with someone who could succeed him, who could sequel that character. And I think Patton Oswalt is the only comic I can think of that can do it well. It's really good.
TV's Frank is obviously just Frank Conniff.
Yes.
And Frank Conniff is a very unusual dude.
Yeah, and funny.
And so is Patton Oswalt, very unusual and funny.
Yeah.
And they do kind of have a similar, I mean, they even look slightly similar.
Yeah, they're like roly-poly kind of gray-haired dudes, like in their middle age.
Yeah. You know,
doofy dudes, doofy right. white, doughy guys.
Right, right. And it's well-produced, but it's not overproduced.
Do you mean the show itself?
Yeah, just the framing of the show.
Yeah.
I feel like later in seasons 12 and 13, they got a little off track. But at this point, they really still seem to be understanding what it was they were doing.
Well, this is when they were on Netflix. So I think they had the highest budget that they ever had until like in the new shit. And then afterwards, I think they went down a step from season 11 to 12 to 13. They kept like lowering the budget and the scope of it.
Yeah.
And making it smaller.
But this isn't good because it has a high budget. In fact, they go to some trouble to not... I mean, like, I'm thinking about the robots they build for the scene where they just, you know, tear them apart. I mean, those are not high-budget robots.
Yeah.
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 This is a really solid episode. Like, I could easily imagine falling asleep to this one, you know, which is a compliment.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's got that kind of super generic Mystery Science Theater energy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It lets you kind of duck in and out. You don't need, like, no minute is required for any other minute. You could just sort of enjoy a scene and then go wash your dishes or pay attention for a few minutes and then not pay attention. The skits don't really require a lot of, like, knowledge of the film or the lore of the show or anything. They're just kind of doing their thing, you know?
And this would be an episode I might show someone that wasn't familiar with the show.
Sure.
I think if you like this, you're going to like Mystery Science Theater just in general.
Right.
Which is about the highest praise I can give. I mean, to reboot a show and then get the core of it is, not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, and they were only on episode 3, so it's really gratifying to see them nail the reboot so early on.
But it is weird that we're doing this podcast and we somehow ended up with I mean, we got a season 8, which is pretty classic MST, but even that's like the newer versions. And then we ended up with season 13 and now season 11. I wonder when we're going to get to like...
Yeah. Well, when you were doing the randomizer, I just kept thinking to myself, like, I know we're just going to get KTMA like, right away.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to talk about the just them sitting there not really riffing much and the movies being really bad. And
like, we haven't seen anything Japanese yet.
No Gamera movies.
No.
Prince of Space.
Or Star Fugitive, or what is that was called?
Yeah, I guess you could say we've been lucky. I mean, I know there's a lot of episodes that just didn't land for me. Like if we stopped the podcast at this episode, people would have an impression of us as being like hardcore fanboys of the show. And I am a fanboy of the show, but I also acknowledge there's probably at least 40 or 50 episodes that I just don't want to watch again, like ever.
Oh, I don't know if that's true. I mean, we panned the last one pretty hard.
Oh, you mean the H.G. Wells
one? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we started out talking about...
I think it gets worse than that,
though. Yeah.
Because we gave that one, like, what, like a 5 or something, or somewhere in the middle?
I mean, to be clear, and you might feel differently than about this than me, I would rather watch even the worst episode of Mystery Science Theater than a lot of other things. I mean,
yeah. I guess it depends on if you mean like I have to sit there and watch it and I'm not multitasking, because that's pretty hard for some of these episodes. They get boring.
The only ones I might carve out an exception for are some of the really early K2MAs.
Yeah.
Before it really was a real show.
Season 1, I think, was still kind of catching up.
I think season 1 is not bad. What I'm talking about are the ones where they freely admit that they didn't even really write any jokes beforehand and they were just live riffing. That's hard to take. But once they got to the point where it was a real show, I'll pretty much watch any episode.
Well, we'll see if you still feel that way after you've watched some of the some of the bad ones.
So I guess we should give it a score now.
Now I want to calibrate. So we gave Jack Frost got an 8 overall or something like that.
Yes.
And then H.G. Wells went way down.
Right.
To like a 5 or something.
Right.
And this is the third one we've watched.
Right.
Okay.
So I know my personal score. So let me think about like what score I want to give this one. Okay, I think I got it.
Okay, do you want to go first?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, what do you give it?
So I would give this a 6.
Oh, interesting. That's lower than I thought you'd go.
Well, because I gave the first one, that Jack Frost one, a 7.
Yeah.
And I thought Jack Frost was an above-average Mystery Science Theater episode. And then the second one was a below-average. And then this is pretty much exactly average. And again, I want to clarify, that's a compliment because I love Mystery Science Theater, so... being average for Mystery Science Theater is still hilarious.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is like the scientific industry standard Mystery Science Theater episode.
Yeah.
Better, no worse.
So are you scoring your numbers to try to find the Mystery Science Theater average? Because I was sort of thinking about just like how good of a piece of television is it?
Oh, no, you know? I'm not. I'm doing more like how average Mystery Science Theater is it.
Oh, interesting.
So like the average Misty episode would get, I guess, a 5 for me.
Oh,
or
okay.
5.5. Okay. So this is like a 6.
Well, maybe our scoring's going to be different then. Because I'm thinking more about like, I think the average Mystery Science Theater episode for me is like a 7.
Oh, okay.
Probably. Well, I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, because I mean, if I was doing an average against all content I've ever watched, then even the worst ones would probably get like a 7. And
oh, really?
I mean, because, well, you know me, I'm picky. I don't like most stuff.
Okay, well, I guess I haven't really thought about that. I'll just stay knee-jerk. I'll just keep knee-jerk reacting.
Yeah, well, what number did you have?
I would go higher. I'd probably be like a 7 or an 8. Maybe. Yeah, because the riffing is so good. I was laughing out loud. I got to get this joke just back into the zeitgeist. When they're the two scientists, the two smart ones, are talking about their experiment, like rebuilding the portal, and they say we're going to need a guinea pig, and then they both turn and they've got big grins on their faces, and they look back at Danny, and then Jonah or one of them says, "What an idiot do?" I mean, I just was like, I was bawling, man. That was great. So, yeah, I mean, just because the riffing is like a 10 and a half out of 10, I think it's got to get like an 8. And the skits. The skits were really, really good. The skit with Joel and that other guy, like being space swingers, like I just really, really good.
This isn't my favorite riff, but I wrote this one down because, again, I felt like it was like just a classic Misty riff when the character on screen said, "I don't care." And Crow is like, "I'm totally jaded." It's yeah. just like, yeah.
Yeah, slipping it in there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also wrote down the one about good morrow and fair dinkum to you and your android family.
Yeah. Yeah, it was probably the best. I think the riffing was the strongest of the three that we've watched so far for me. Even more so than Jack Frost. I think they were really on it for parts of it.
Okay, first of all, I'm going to make you pick a number. You have to pick a number, 7
yeah,
or 8.
Yeah, I said 8.
8, okay. Yeah. I can't entirely agree, and I guess the riffing was very, very good. But Jack Frost, I guess the thing about Jack Frost was a lot of riffs weren't that great, but it was such a outlandish movie that when they really nailed it, maybe I've just seen too many 70s-ish space movies with bad plots.
You're a little numb to it, huh?
I mean, maybe a little bit. Whereas the number of Russo-Finnish, folk tales is pretty low. So yeah. I guess it just gets points for the creativity. Also, like I said in the Jack Frost episode, I might have been grading a little higher just because it exceeded expectations so much.
Yeah.
I thought that was going to be so trash. And
yeah,
then they turned it around, man.
Yeah, we were really excited by how much better it was than we thought it was going to be. And I think these other two, I think the H.G. Wells one was significantly worse than I expected.
Right.
And now this one is just pretty much what exactly, I was hoping for.
Yeah. Exactly what I was expecting. Yeah. So I went from 4 to 7 to 6. Yeah. And I don't mean to suggest in any way that this is bad. I could see myself putting this one on, like I said, just, when I want to go to sleep or I'm making dinner or something. Cause it's, it is a very consistent, predictable, Misty vibe. And that in and of itself is an amazing accomplishment because you got to remember it was 10 years cut off for the show.
Yeah. A long time. Yeah. No, more than that, I think. Probably more like 15 years. Because I think it was... Didn't the original wrap up at the end of the 90s, basically?
I'd have to go back and look.
Yeah.
It was a long break.
Yeah.
So to be able to bring the show back and capture the spirit, I mean, it's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, and I think it was at a time when it wasn't so clear that literally everything was going to come back. Like now no one's ever surprised when a franchise returns, but I think back in 20 whatever this was, 12 or whatever, there was still that feeling that it was really exciting when something like Mystery Science Theater would get resurrected. It seemed really special and unusual. It was like, "Oh my God, that show? Like I really thought that one was done." So, and to have Joel involved in it and to see him on screen, like, that's really cool. I mean, I do geek out a little bit, like, it just to see things come full circle. I really wish that, it makes me wish that there was more involvement from more of the past cast. Like, I wish Mike had wanted to get into this. I think there's an interview where Joel said, like, he basically left the door open to all of them. He's like, any of them can come and hang out and work on Mystery Science Theater, and so clearly they just don't want to, like Mike and Kevin and Bill Court. I think Kevin and Bill actually do eventually come back for a cameo, but Mike never did.
Well, I think it's probably just because of Riff Trax. I mean, yeah, Riff Trax was so successful that...
And still is.
And yeah. still is that,
Yeah.
I mean, they were busy.
And Riff Trax is probably just more fun because it's sort of easier. They can just sort of sit there.
More fun to be a part of.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, especially for Mike, because I think Mike always was most interested in the riffing in the movies.
Writing jokes for these movies and riffing on them was like his passion. I mean, he was the head writer for the original show. So.
Right, but I mean, I don't think he cared much about the frame story and the robots and the invention and exchange and all that jazz. Yeah. I think he was up for it, but like that wasn't his part of the show.
Yeah, I think that's right on, yeah. I would assume that's the reason.
And I would say the same thing about Bill. Now, Kevin was just kind of one of those guys that was up for everything all the time. But maybe that's one of the reasons why the film crew is so plot light.
Mm.
Because that was kind of their take on it. and there's not much frame story.
Yeah, and why they play themselves.
Yeah.
Even though they're filmed, they're just them.
Pretty much.
Them, yeah.
Whereas Joel, I think, had that community theater thing that made him want to, like, build robots and have a show.
Yeah, he liked storylines and puppets and, you know, props and, you know, prop comedy and things like that.
Yeah, that's just who he was. He had that kind of emo Phillips energy.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Well, okay. Any last thoughts about the Time Travelers?
No, I would just say it's a really good palate cleanser after the shape of things that have been before or whatever the hell it's called. Like, it's really nice. It's a relief to see a good episode with a movie that's watchable and that I can get through without just, like, passing out in boredom. So
I think we can all agree it was way better than The Shape of Things to Come.
I wonder if we do this for a long time and we do a lot of episodes of this, if we'll look back on that Shape of whatever and be like, actually, that's lower. Like, we were too generous to it.
I think the main reason that I just instinctively didn't want to give it an even lower score is I just feel so bad for Emily, because I really don't think Emily is the problem.
No.
That movie, it just was not a good choice.
It was a bad one. Yeah, it was a bad choice. Yeah.
It'll be really interesting to continue to piece together what it is about that particular one, because they're all bad movies. None of these movies are good. So why is that one just so unriffable?
I don't know. There is sometimes a je ne sais quoi to movie making.
Yeah.
Some movies are just worse than other movies, and it's hard to explain why.
You might have been getting close, though, with your comment about the meandering nature of it. This movie had a fairly linear plot. Most of the scenes seem connected, and they connected to the scene before them, and they kind of...
Yeah.
I mean, the plot's not good, but it does kind of make sense in almost a kind of young adult science fiction-y sort of way.
Yeah, it has script intentionality. Like, there's a feeling like they bothered to edit it and sort of be a little bit, you know, disciplined in how they've put together a story.
Until the end.
The end just blew it.
Yeah.
So we didn't talk about the end, but, like, they walk into the distant future, and at first it's a black void, and everyone's kind of scared.
With the screen where you obviously have to step to the right because they can't film the transition.
Right, right. Yeah, of course. So, and then I thought it was going to end with that. I thought it was going to be like one of those things, like a lot of those 70s movies would just have a question mark and be like, the end.
Right,
and,
right. You know,
and set up for the sequel that never came. And then for some reason, they cut to the same people and they're just walking through a beautiful, like, sylvan glen.
Idyllic paradise.
And meadow, and there's nice music playing. And you're like, okay. And then fade to black.
I have been told... And I can't remember what movie it is, but there's some movie... Oh, Blade Runner. Blade Runner is the famous one where the studios basically came to them and they were like, the ending's too gloomy. You just have to have a happy ending. And so they literally filmed like another couple minutes of arbitrary content and just glued it on the end.
But why not just cut the black void part altogether then and just get this smash cut to them in the Sylvan Glen?
It's possible it happened at the last minute or something.
Like they just wedged it in without editing, really? Like they just...
Well, I'm sure they edited. Otherwise, it would have looked terrible. But maybe they just didn't think about it.
Yeah.
They were running around at the last minute.
Yeah. I mean, these movies were made oftentimes very quickly. So, yeah.
Or they just wanted the black void ending. That's the real ending. But then they were forced to glue on the green idyllic paradise because somebody told them they had to.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
So in their minds, they edit it to just cut that part out.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. 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 I think you're probably right.
Yeah.
But it was very unexpected and very jarring. And it made it almost hard to enjoy the end of the show itself, except then they were just so funny at the end. Like, Just the skits were great.
What was the part at the end? What was the skit at the end? I forget.
Yeah, I don't... I'm trying
to remember. It was them with the 200th episode.
Oh, yeah.
And bringing out
the
cake.
Max is like, well, really, this is episode 3. Like, we didn't have anything to do with the other 197. And she's just like, shut up. It's so good. So good. Yeah. The rapport between Max and Kinga is often... Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah.
So I guess this is our episode 3.
It's yeah, that's right.
Three, and this is our
episode
3.
It's episode 3 of the reboot, and it's episode 3 of our podcast.
So I guess we'll leave it there.
Okay.
So until next time.
What will be?
It'll be interesting to see what the randomizer... It's been interesting so far. These are not three I would have picked at all.
Will the randomizer give us a Black Void or a Sylvan Glen?
I wonder if it's going to even pick anything I've even recognized. Because all three times I've been like, wait, what? Is that even a Mystery Science Theater episode?
Yeah.
I had to go look it up.
I don't know. That's the fun of it, though.
Yeah, no, it's great. Okay, well, until next time.
Yeah.
Did it always smell like cat food in here? I guess when you're around it all day, you don't really notice.
Wait, did the movie just lap itself?